There's a story that I need to tell, and some of you might know it, but I think we need to tell it because we need to be on the same page. A very, very long time ago, there was a righteous man, but he was the only righteous man left. And at the same time, God was angry, and he was angry because mankind had become wicked and evil. They were so wicked that the only way to really repair things was to start over. And so a great flood, a worldwide flood would come, and it would cover the mountains, and it would get rid of the evil on the earth. With one exception, he finds this righteous man, and he tells him to build an ark, which is a huge boat, and find all the animals and some family and friends, and the ark will protect you. God gave very specific instructions. I want you to build the ark, 120 cubits long, 120 cubits high, 120 cubits wide. And you're not going to argue with a God that tells you to do these kinds of things, and so you do it because you're righteous and you're faithful and you know that it's true. And depending on how you measure a cubit, that's something like 60 meters long, so about two-thirds the size of a football field. This would take a while. It took a little faith to obey. And sure enough, when they finished, the storm clouds gathered. They loaded up the ark with the animals, the crew, gold and silver, a pilot, the family. And the rains started raging, and the heavens opened up with waters, and this boat with oars and rudders and everything else tried to navigate the storm. As soon as the storm died down, this righteous man opened up one of the windows, and he felt the fresh air, and he realized as he began to weep that God had kept his word. And he stepped out, and he did what you usually did in maritime situations, because you didn't have a GPS. Nobody had an iPhone, and really, you didn't even have a compass. So the thing you would do is you would send out certain types of birds, and if the bird came back, that meant probably there was no land for you to go find. But if the bird went in a certain direction and you noticed it, and the bird didn't come back, perhaps it found land. And so he did this. He first sends out a swallow, but it comes back. And so he waits until he starts to feel bumps underneath the boat. Maybe he's starting to bump into the tops of mountains. A little later, he sends out a dove, and the dove flies back. And finally, he sends out a raven, and the raven never comes back. And so he pulls his boat in, and this righteous man offers a burnt offering with the idea that the scent pleases God. And this God promises to do two things for him. Number one, a promise that I'll never do this again. No more floods. And number two, I will grant you the breath of God, which means you can become immortal. You and your wife will live on forever on this island I give you in pure bliss. Now, the story of this righteous man, you all know his name. His name is Uptop-Minishim, right? Uptop-Minishim. You might know the story as Noah. But this is from the Epic of Gilgamesh, not from the Bible. In the Epic of Gilgamesh, it talks about the different Sumerian gods. And this is a popular story in and around the Jewish people about the same time. And although a little bit of the details are different, the overarching theme of the story is pretty similar. These gods want to destroy the world because of all the evil, but this other god comes up and says that he wants to warn the righteous man that he sees. Why would I even tell you the story? It has nothing to do with the Bible, but it's similar to a Bible story. It's because there's flood stories that originate from nearly every single continent in the world. They have something in common. They all believe that this world was once flooded. And sometimes there's atheist scientists that try to explain the flood story away, but then you can look at all history, even geology, religions, they all talk about it. A story of a flood that covers the world. And so when we come to the story in Genesis, throughout most of history, all the other cultures will say, yeah, we have a story about that as well. And it's like our flood story in that God understands the depravity of mankind. This is something that needs to change in us. This is something that's happened before. What's really interesting about our story, though, is it's even more fanciful than some of the others. The way the Bible tells the story, if you look in chapter 6, right before the flood, It tells you even more about the depravity that was here in the world. And it's our Old Testament lesson for today, one of the most obscure Bible passages out there. It talks of the Nephilim. And the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and afterwards when the sons of God went to the daughters of humans and had children by them. Now pay very close attention, because I heard during one of the Bible classes there were a lot of people that didn't understand why these other friends were getting on the ark with Noah. The Epic of Gilgamesh is not our story of Noah. That is not our story of Noah. And as we come to a passage like this, the term sons of God is a popular Hebrew phrase for angels. So somehow here in the Bible, when it explains the story, it's talking about how angels went down to the daughters of men and had children with them. So these offspring we're about to talk about, as far as the Bible is concerned, seems to indicate that angels had children with women, and these created the heroes of old, the men of renown. Which sounds like what? Greek mythology, right? Sounds a little bit like Greek mythology. And I find that really, really terribly interesting. And that's when the Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and how all our inclinations, our thoughts, and the evil desires of us were evil all the time. And nobody talks about this crazy, interesting passage in the Bible. So let's go back to the story. Angels mating with women and producing heroes of old, mighty men of renown, which is why I called the title of the sermon Demigods. I could have said Greek Titans or something like that. And it's here in the Bible, and as the Bible explains it a little later on, this is also their explanation for why there were giants on the earth, including Goliath. When the Bible tells you why Goliath is here, it points back to Genesis 6, and it points back to angels that were taking daughters of men and having children with them. And so do you believe in titans and demigods existed on this earth with superpowers of some sort? Because apparently the Bible does. Apparently the Bible does. Now besides the giants, there's only one other example in the Bible of a specific demigod type person. And it's Samson. Some of you might know the story of Samson, but what's really interesting if we're talking about the Bible and Greek mythology is how much similar it is between the story of Samson and the story of Hercules. Each of them had a miraculous birth. Hercules was a product of Zeus and his mom. Samson's mom was barren until she was visited by an angel and miraculously gave birth to Samson. Both of them had an appetite for food and wine and women, even though both of them let it get out of hand all the time. They were both also especially naughty when they weren't supposed to be. Samson in particular had a Nazirite vow. And having this Nazirite vow meant there were different things that he was supposed to avoid, most notably crazy women, certain kinds of food, and all wine. And Samson, like Hercules, kept breaking these rules all the time. Each of these guys was so superhumanly strong, they were able to rip apart a lion with their bare hands. Samson and Hercules. They each had failed marriages, and then they both ultimately met their demise because of their wives. Samson's wife, Delilah, had his hair cut. Hercules' wife poisoned him. They each chose when they were going to die. You could almost say they each gave up their own spirit. Hercules had 12 labors to prove himself. And depending on how you account for the different miraculous feats that Samson did, most commentators would tell you Samson also had exactly 12 feats that he had to go through. Each of them, when they were thirsty, somehow were given a miraculous spring that opened up so that they could give themselves water to drink. They each, at some point, had their heads shaved and their hair cut off. And most notably was the superhuman strength. And this is the sort of strength that no amount of cream and clear and steroids and HGH could give you strength. This is Arnold and way more kind of strong, right? This is fighting hundreds of people, soldiers, by yourself kind of strong. That's Samson, and that's Hercules. Now, back in the 60s, I don't know what you people were doing in the 60s, but it's all kinds of wrong. There's a terrible, bad 60s movie showing a fight scene between Hercules and Samson. And just so you know how bad your movies were back in the 60s, I want to show you a little clip of it.
Samson, look out! My leg is caught in the rock!
In all the sagas of valor and violence, of breakneck action and hair-raising adventure that have endured from the age of legend, three names stand out above all others. Hercules, who could strangle a wild bull or a raging lion with his bare hands. Samson, whose superhuman power enabled him to fight 100 men single-handed. Ulysses, the reckless planner of dangerous deeds, tracking down the fabulous man-killing sea monster from the depths.
Hercules!
Hercules and Samson first met as enemies, locked in awesome hand-to-hand combat in which no one was the winner.
I've never met such strength as yours. Why don't the two of us join forces?
I was thinking the same thing.
Later, their friendship was formed in the crucible of their fierce resistance.
Why don't we join forces?
Enemy,
I'm tired of wrestling you as well. By the way, this weekend, the new Samson movie was just released. So if you're looking for something a bit more biblically accurate and you want to hear the story of Samson, besides the giants, this one place where we start to wonder a bit about the Titans and this demigod type stuff is the person of Samson. So that's a movie that's tried to be far more biblically accurate. You know, if somebody sees it, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear. Here's the thing. We live in a culture that is fascinated with superheroes. And here in the Bible, we have the story of one, and we also have the story of the giants and everything else. The question is, where does Samson get his strength? And here's a hint. It's not from his hair. Samson gets his strength from God. And throughout his journey with God, Samson kept detouring from the path. In fact, his hair was just the last Nazirite vow that he broke. Throughout his life, he kept checking them off one by one with his unfaithfulness towards the vow that he had, which included food he wasn't supposed to eat, wine he wasn't supposed to drink, women that he wasn't supposed to be with, and touching even dead animals and other things, until finally he let his hair be cut, and the haircut was the last of the vows to be broken. So it's not the hair that gave him the strength, it was his connection to God. And perhaps as you look in the Bible, you see no correlation between the story of Upnapishtim and Noah. Or maybe you don't see any kind of connection between Samson and Hercules. But we have a world that's filled with stories, and some of them are real, and some of them are not real. And if you study world religions, you'll notice that there are common threads, like the flood, that keep coming up as people start to ponder what's going on in the world, what is it with God, how do I explain everlasting life, what happens when I die. And these themes just keep coming up. And each of the stories are certainly not the same, and they don't all understand the same truth. But maybe they're looking at some similar phenomenon. And then Jesus comes along and he says, let me frame the world's stories. Let me frame the world's observations. Let me frame the way that the world has tried to explain some things, these stories and legends and everything else. And then he says, I am the way. When you're wondering what truth is the right truth and which way is the right way, Jesus comes along and he says, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. And not just this life, I'm the everlasting life. At the Areopagus, when Paul is walking around and there's all these idols, all these Greek idols everywhere to all these different gods, and he comes across a god that doesn't have a name. It's the mysterious god. It's an idol to the unknown god. And Paul takes it as an opportunity because he noticed these people are really religious. And they have a lot of fear, and they have a lot of prayers, and they're willing to do lots of things to try to understand God. And Paul sees an opportunity to introduce the real creator to them.
He even quotes Greek philosophy, because what he's trying to tell them is, your Greek philosophy is onto something, but let me show you where all its stories and all its understandings, where it can actually meet a road that's going to take you somewhere. And Paul is very complimentary, but he's also very specific when he brings up this creator God, because he chooses Jesus to be the one that can unlock the mystery of God to these people. Paul knows when you want to unlock the stories of this world, when you want to unlock truth, you unlock Christ. And we have a Bible that speaks of ghosts and demons and angels and demigods and giants and dragons, werewolf, unicorns, griffins, dinosaurs, and the devil. And in our gospel lesson today, when Jesus comes and he meets somebody that's been suffering, this paralyzed man that is suffering, Jesus' intention is to come and to forgive his sins because he's worried about his everlasting life. And everybody around him, all the religious experts, are offended that Jesus would have the audacity to forgive sins. Jesus knows the greater miracle is the forgiveness of sins. The greater miracle is to give him salvation. But so that the people might understand that the greater miracle is in their midst and they don't realize it, he instead does the easier miracle, the lesser miracle, the miracle that just invites the man to stand up and walk to take that paralysis away. Because we can take all these different things that we're going to look at through the scriptures, and some of them might be a bit more mythological and symbolic, and some of them might be very much real, like Samson. But as we come through all these different things, ultimately we're going to meet the real power of the universe, except this is the power of the universe that doesn't have muscles on his arms. This is a power that has the love of God in his heart, and we see it in Jesus. And that's something that Paul realizes all the time. How do you fight the monsters that are out there in this world? How do you get people on the best path? Jesus is pretty clear about his way. This is the way of Jesus. This is how Jesus explains it. This is how Jesus says to each and you, to you and I, to all of us, if you want to follow me, here's the key. Here's my way. Here's my truth. Here's my life. This is what Jesus says it is. Receive the love of Christ as a free gift. Receive the love of Christ and then share the love of Christ. Receive the love of Christ and share the love of Christ. Let's pray.